You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Hopefully your Halloween is going well and not too spooky for you, unless you want it to be really spooky. Loads coming up on the show, as you can imagine, over the next hour or so. Let's get to some comments, though, to bring us up towards the bingo numbers. And it's jackpot today, so hopefully someone will win big. Can you point out that when the Irish went to other countries, they weren't housed, fed, clothed and put before the country's own citizens? This calling things far right is played out. Change the record if you can't see it. Now you're blind. Well, no, I didn't use the word far right, by the way. I'm not sure that word was used or that phrase was used at all. It is slightly more complex than that, of course, because many of us went abroad and we weren't very welcome in some parts. Some of the Irish that emigrated to Scotland and elsewhere, Birmingham and London, weren't exactly welcomed with open arms. In the American case, many of us had to go over there and work illegally, and also still live over there illegally. So, you know, it's not been all rosy for Irish heading away. And also, too, it's very important to sort of understand what the American, some Americans' view of Irish. For example, J.D. Vance, he blamed immigrants from Ireland for the U.S. crime rate. He talked about when Irish moved to America, there was a rise in crime. You had this massive wave of Irish immigration, Vance said, and that had its problems, its consequences. You had higher crime rates, you had these ethnic enclaves, you had inter-ethnic conflict in the country where you really hadn't had that before. So that's the potentially and likely future Vice President of the United States. That's his view of Irish immigration over the years. It's not this rosy picture where we went out and built nations, which we did. But as I say, that's the views of the soon-to-be potentially Vice President of the United States, that we went over there, crime rates went up, there was ethnic enclaves, inter-ethnic conflict, the gangs of New York he referenced, and so on and so forth. So as I say, it's not always as rosy history as one might think. If you are free thinkers and don't just take what the media say, you can search and you can read the documents that are published stating that they need a repopulation Europe as it is officially dying. This is deliberate. All this is hurting the vulnerable Irish community along with the vulnerable immigrants. But birth rates at the moment in Ireland and Britain and the United States and China and other countries are running at less than 2. And that's not enough to sustain the population as it ages. So there is I think, is this what you're talking of? There is, the reality is, unless others come in, there's not going to be the people to sustain the generations as they get older. That's not a conspiracy theory or anything, by the way. That's an absolute fact, because our birth rate, there's going to be more older people living than there are younger people to work, pay taxes and care for them, unless we start having more children. Could you please wish... I'll come back to that in a second. It's a comment mixed up with a request. Is calling someone New Irish not controversial as well? See, it's really what we can find insults or offence in every spoken word language if we're looking for it. New Irish, no. I mean, if someone's an immigrant and they are from a different part of the world, it doesn't really matter what colour they are, I'm not referencing that, and then they go through the process and they receive Irish citizenship. I think that's new Irish, because they're newly Irish. I watched the programme last night about the brutality in Irish schools, and it was shocking. This brutality by some teachers was criminal, and the government supported this behaviour. It was the same in our national school in the 1950s, caned every day. And also, I was at a local secondary school in the late 1960s, and pupils' hair just beside their ears were pulled on a regular basis by two of our teachers. Now, I've just had to leave that school out because it's very possible those teachers are still alive, and I'm not in any way taken away from your experience. I just have to be a little careful. But unfortunately, over yesterday, and it's starting today as well, some of the stories of corporal punishment in schools in this region, and it's not surprising because it was widespread, absolutely shocking. Greg, that house in Bridgend is lying empty. There's nobody living in it. I live in the area. There could be a couple of them. I don't know. I respect what you say, though. Morning, Greg. I think it's shameful that your caller Emmett has to come on his local radio station begging for help to get accommodation and social welfare. We're housing thousands of asylum seekers and migrants and paying them social welfare, and yet an Irish local man is not being cared for. And he didn't go down that route, but I think many people listening perhaps could have understood if he did, whether they agreed or not. Hi, Greg. I don't agree with pocket money. Back in our day, Grandad always said it was hard work earning your own loaf, but goes a long way. Crusty Kevin in Dunlow. Thanks, Kevin. I mean, I suppose, you know, you use it in our house. You know, you earn your pocket money. It's not sort of just given to you because you're looking up at you with your what do you call that? Sad dog eyes. But yeah, I take your point, Kevin. Thanks for that. Matthew on Facebook. I wonder what you think of this one. Just want to comment in relation to shops selling hen eggs to teenagers on Halloween. Teenagers are using them to throw at cars and house windows. Last year in Ballymacool Estate, two teenagers were going around with a crate of eggs targeting house windows. My two young sons were playing on their computer in the sitting room when an egg hit the window on the edge of the frame. Had the egg hit the middle of the window, it could have broken it. I went outside and seen them running away and seen neighbours out as they did their houses too. My kids were scared to death for a few days, and there was also elderly people's windows hit, scaring them to death. So could shops please not sell teenagers eggs? They know themselves what they're used for. Parents need to talk to their children because any damage to windows and cars will have to be paid for. Throwing eggs at moving cars can also cause an accident. All right, thanks very much for that. I wonder, are they sourcing these eggs elsewhere? Are shops selling eggs in big numbers to children? Are we telling our children, look, it's not cool to throw eggs at people's houses? It's an absolute mess. And what also happens is people feel that they're personally targeted, and it can cause quite a lot of distress. My daughter doesn't have a medical card because both her and her husband work. They have a young family. She had to attend the doctor. She paid for that appointment and paid for her prescription. She was also advised to go for a scan, which she paid for. The doctor phoned her with the results of the scan. And after that call, she received a text to say she had to pay €30 for that phone call. I just want to know, is this right? Thank you. So I think a lot of that is understandable. She had to pay for a scan. Is that normal? And secondly, is it normal to have to pay to speak to a doctor to read the results of your scan back to you? It's money after money after money, isn't it? I'm not trying to be sarcastic, but tell that man to dress up as and take on the accent of an asylum seeker. Then he'll be housed immediately. I know where you're coming from. Okay. Good morning, Greg. People have blood on their hands. People died needlessly. They didn't have to lock down. They, and even you, Greg, kept saying Sweden was an outlier, yet it turned out everyone else were the outliers. Every country in Europe had a pandemic preparedness plan before COVID. Sweden stuck to theirs. We didn't need to go to jail. Well, the only coverage we did on the Sweden thing, we spoke to people based in Sweden. We spoke to people who said the Sweden approach was right. We spoke to other people that talked of the high mortality rate in Sweden. Life went on, right? But quite a few vulnerable people died as well. There was all sides to it at that time. No one knew what was going on. And I think for the most part, in terms of the general population and the likes of myself, just try and do the best. Because, you know, it's a tough situation. You've got one group of people saying, you know, if you don't do anything, everyone's going to die. And you have another group of people saying, if you do this stuff, everyone's going to die. And who do you listen to and what do? You just try and do your best. Our next guest is in studio. It's Dr. Paul Grant. Good morning to you, Paul. Thanks for your time.
Morning, Greg.
You're going to have to come a little bit close to that microphone, sure. Paul, if you don't mind. I beg your pardon.
Is that okay?
Yep, Dr. Grant is a GP and also has hemochromatosis. And we're talking about a free patient information evening with Dr. Grant for patient family members and members of the public who are interested in finding out more about hemochromatosis, which I am as well. So this is more common in this country than anywhere else in the world. And does it, in layman's terms, mean we overproduce or overstore iron?
Yes, exactly that. It's hemochromatosis. It's an unusual name, strange name, but it means it's a iron metabolism disorder. Yes, people with hemochromatosis tend to absorb too much iron. Now, we all know we need iron. People with anemia and that would be taking iron supplements, so iron is essential. But in people with hemochromatosis, they tend to absorb too much iron. They don't they overload with iron, and that too much iron becomes toxic in the system. And it causes damage to various different organs and systems within the body.
And we'll talk through that in a second, but just for people listening, I mean, people can live long and healthy lives once you know they are have an earlier the earlier the diagnosis the better. Absolutely. I'm sure, yeah. But also with treatment. So we have made great advances in that. It's really about getting people with it, knowing they have it, and or the treatment.
Exactly. So it's all about awareness and knowing that to look out for it, to pick it up by a simple blood test at your GP's, and then the treatment is essentially prevents complications. So it's awareness and early diagnosis, which is very important. As you mentioned, I found out myself just by chance 20 years ago that I had this condition. And luckily, I found out at an early age before there was any complications and then started on the treatment very, very quickly. So it's very simple. You basically have a blood donation essentially two or three times a year. And that will prevent any complications.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it, as to how you go about ridding yourself of the excess iron, I suppose you could say. I want to talk about that in a moment. Sure. But and we've talked about this as well in the past. It's Ireland's most common genetic disorder and is more common in Ireland than anywhere else in the world. Has any research been done as to determine why that might be?
Well, it is a genetic condition. It's known as the Celtic curse because of the Celtic nature, the people in this part of the world. It's largely to do with the fact that we are an island nation and the gene pool is very small. So the gene is passed on from one person to the next and continues down the line. And that's why we have a preponderance of it in Ireland and Wales and Scotland, very high rates. So about 1 in 83 people in Ireland have two copies of this defective gene, which means they potentially can go on to develop complications of hemochromatosis. And 1 in 5 people have one copy of that gene, which means they're carriers and they can pass one copy on to their offspring. And if the other partner is a carrier, can pass one copy on. And then that offspring will have.
And you can see how it perpetuates there, yes, obviously. Because it passes through, right? And on it goes.
Yes.
There's nothing can be done preventatively, is there?
There's no cure, but that's no reason to panic because it's treatment. It's detection and treatment. And the treatment is simple venesection, which means it's very similar, the very same as going to the blood transfusion service where you donate a unit of blood. Your GP, we do it in Buncrana regularly. I did an audit before I come on the show here. We do about 5 venesections per week, which is quite a large number. And we have about 45 people coming on a regular basis with a diagnosis of hemochromatosis. Mm. So you give one unit of blood, about 450 mils of blood, and that takes away the iron from your system. And if you give that on a regular basis, it prevents the iron overload. So that prevents complications or damage such as liver disease, diabetes, heart disease, and joint problems.
I can't remember from the last interview I did on this. Can you offload that blood by way of donation to the Irish Blood Transfusion Board?
That's a very good point, and I'm glad you brought that up because yes is the answer. You can. Okay, now you can. Previously you couldn't, and that was a great shame. When we take the blood in Buncrana in our surgery, we have to incinerate that blood and we cannot use that blood for donation. But in the last number of years, the Irish Blood Transfusion Service are providing this service now and they will take blood from people with hemochromatosis and that blood can be used for donation. So as I say, we take about 5 units of blood every week. That's about 250 a year. If those people attended the Blood Transfusion Service, that blood could be used for donation.
And we know there always is a 2 or 3 day supply of blood, particularly in certain groups. So, I mean, looking at the some of the symptoms of it, the early indicators, is where maybe it can be quite complicated and maybe why you were lucky in stumbling across this by chance. Mm-hmm. Chronic tiredness, joint pain, abdominal pain, irregular heartbeat. Mm-hmm. I presume all or some are present. Mm-hmm. All or some are going to be present in various degrees.
Yes.
As best as you can, what should people be looking out for as you know, positive indicators?
Right. Yeah, the problem is the symptoms you mentioned can be very vague, and that is a problem. Sometimes people are just tired. Maybe they think they're overworking or not getting enough sleep, they're tired. Maybe joint pains. These are common things. It doesn't mean you have hemochromatosis, but they can indicate this, you know. Another thing is people should be very aware nowadays. We're trying to increase the awareness. So if there's a family member with hemochromatosis, you maybe need to go and have this checked yourself. The more complicated or more serious complications, rather, such as liver disease or diabetes, these are late complications, but you know, they do happen, and we do see them,
and we don't. What we're trying to do is here to find out long before yes. your organs are started, because that's becomes far more complicated.
Once damage is done, the treatment with venesection doesn't reverse that damage, but it can prevent it getting yeah. worse, or it can prevent damage being done in any case.
Yeah. So, if it's, you know, obviously GPs have to see an awful lot of people, and they are general practitioners as well. So, if you go to your GP, right, and you have some of these symptoms, can you self-advocate? Can you say, listen, could you run a test?
Oh yes, of course. And in particular, if there's a family member or
yes,
family
of course,
history
yeah.
of the condition, that would be important to do. And, you know, we're quite open to people saying, look, you know, I'm feeling these symptoms, and is there any chance we could do an iron test or a ferritin test, which is one of the specific tests we do? So we do that regularly, and we wouldn't have a problem doing that for patients, you know, because, as I say, as we know, it is very common. We like to pick it up early before there's any complications, and treat it. Very happy to treat it in Buncrana or in the blood transfusion service.
Yeah, now this question came in a number of times the last time we talked about this. Recently tested positive for hemochromatosis, but the ferritin tests show normal iron levels. What do you do in that situation? That doesn't seem uncommon, as I say. We've had that a few times when discussing yeah. this.
Well, possibly. So this person is positive for hemochromatosis. But perhaps they were picked up nice very early, and the iron levels hadn't accumulated. So usually it's in the 30s in males and in the 40s in females that the iron levels will start to accumulate and start to become toxic levels. So perhaps that person was just picked up at an early stage, which is very good, because we can initiate treatment then and prevent any complications.
So when you when you offload your blood, I don't know what the proper terminology is, but that'll do. Do you just have a set routine in that now, or do you base it based on sort of iron levels? So do you monitor your iron levels?
Yeah.
Or are people's iron levels monitored?
Yeah, people with the condition then will have regular blood tests.
Yes.
To measure the ferritin and the iron stored in the system. Once we know someone has. And initially when they're diagnosed, their iron levels will be quite high. So what we do is take regular blood tests, blood venesection, where we take off a unit of blood. We might have to do that every week for up to 10, 12, 14 weeks until we get the levels down to an acceptable level. So we measure a thing called ferritin in the blood, and we like to keep that at a certain level below 100. Then we know we're safe. And once we've initiated treatment and maintaining treatment, then we do regular, every 3 months, 3 to 6 months, we do a blood test to see what their iron levels are. And we would do maybe 2 or 3 venesections per year then to maintain yeah. their iron levels.
There's a system in place that this
Absolutely.
Is figured out,
Absolutely.
Isn't there?
Whereby you
go through it, and eventually you go through this stuff, and eventually you find the individual patient's requirements.
Yeah.
A caller says, it's a great shame that a lot of our hospitals can't save blood for use. It's a pity too that our blood banks need 90 days between donations, but that wouldn't preclude hemochromatosis patient because the gap would be greater than 90 days,
yes,
I'd imagine.
Yes, exactly.
Spread relatively even
yeah.
over the
yeah.
3 years. Is hemochromatosis classed as a disability, asks another caller?
No, and not that I'm aware. No, I don't think so. No, it's
yeah,
not. No.
Okay.
And as you can see, luckily, 20 years down the line,
you're looking good, doctor.
I'm not so far not disabled anyway. No.
Right. Okay. I understand where they're coming from
yes,
too, as
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
So the key thing here is early diagnosis. It's vital because you know there's a lot of conditions where we don't get any foresight, and then the damage is done, mm-hmm. or our lives are shortened, or it impacts our lives. This is an annoyance potentially, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But with proper management from an early stage, you can go on and live your full, healthy life. Mm-hmm. So, again, if someone's listening and they're going, I'm a bit tired lately, you know, mm-hmm. People less likely maybe to spot the irregular heartbeat mm-hmm. or the abdominal pain, are they more prevalent, like, in women and men or men and women? Do you know how some, mm-hmm. some conditions, women's symptoms can be a little bit different or mm-hmm. vice versa?
Not really. Women, as I say, will develop it later because of periods, etc. They develop iron overload at a later stage than men, but no, the symptoms would be the same. And as we say, unfortunately, they're largely vague at the early stages. So, if in doubt, test for it, in particular if there is any family history, of course.
What age should my children get tested? Because I have hemochromatosis, which is an interesting question, yeah. actually, because you could test, can you test too early and then it goes off the radar and yeah. is missed?
Well, what we can do is we do the blood test for to check for iron. But in someone who's, say, in that case, maybe the parent or a sibling have hemochromatosis, we would do the genetic test, which is a different test, testing for the actual defective gene to see if they have two copies of that gene, which means they have a potential for developing iron overload. That won't necessarily, but they have a potential, high potential to do so if you have two copies of the gene. So we would, in that case, that caller's case, we would do a genetic test. To see, we wouldn't do genetic tests on everyone, but in that case we would.
Yeah, okay, because the family history is there.
Family history, yes.
So if a mum or dad's listening and they have hemochromatosis, or particularly if they both had it, and hopefully they'd be aware of it and getting the treatment, uh-huh. I presume most of them are pass that information on to siblings or children, and they're also...
Yeah, all children would and siblings would be yeah. tested then, as I say, genetic testing. We wouldn't do genetic testing on the general population unless their ferritin levels were high.
Right, okay, so this is all ahead of an event taking place next Wednesday. Mm-hmm. It's at 7 p.m. at the Clannery Hotel, Letterkenny. It's free, it's in person. Talk to us about what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, I'm going to give a brief slideshow talk about my own experience of hemochromatosis and the general hemochromatosis story, the management, the treatment, the awareness, just to make people aware of what happens if they do come across a diagnosis of hemochromatosis. It's very simple. They can, nothing to fear, but the important thing is to find out early. So there'll be a talk, and then there will be a question and answer session. And the Irish Hemochromatosis Association will be there as well. So there'll be an exchange of ideas and views, and it'll be a very open night. Hopefully it'll be very enjoyable. Hope all our listeners can come.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. I tested positive for hemochromatosis and my ferritin level is at 100. But my GPs have the opinion that I don't need treatment and I do carry two genes.
Well, 100 is the cutoff point. Some people would be stricter and say 50 that should be kept up, but between 50 and 100 is good. That's acceptable. So just monitor in that case, and if the levels go above 100, they should be
it's treated. Borderline there, because you're setting someone down a path of having to get blood taken three times a year here, mm-hmm. and that person's right on the tipping point there. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. The GP is to balance up
yes.
the impact on the person versus...
Exactly. Yeah. And it's a matter of monitoring that person. We'll need to be monitored because the levels could climb over time.
Yeah, and I'm sure they will. Is there anything else that's indicative? I suppose, too, if it's not picked up early, that's when, there's a broad range of symptoms from there on.
Yes, as I say, the vaguer symptoms of fatigue and joint pain is very common as well. But then people later can develop serious liver disorder,
yeah.
Diabetes, and heart arrhythmias or okay. irregular beat, which can be very very serious.
Yeah, as I say, we have a head start on it.
Absolutely,
so
yeah.
It's just about getting checking your the stuff we've talked about, i.e. yeah. hereditary stuff, genetic stuff, but also then looking out for those symptoms. And I'm sure your GP won't mind running the test for you if they see fit. So it's an open, free event. It is next Wednesday at 7 p.m. in the Clannery Hotel, Letterkenny. It's free and in person. Everybody is welcome to attend. You're going to give a presentation and then a Q&A afterwards. But I Q&A. Also think it's a great opportunity maybe for people, affected with a similar condition to mingle and chat and all. Because
yes,
everyone's situation is, mm-hmm. fundamentally perhaps the same, but quite different too.
Yeah. I hope that will happen and there'll be a forum and opportunity for that, yes.
All right, good stuff. I hope there's a big turnout. It's just, we know, unfortunately, there's a lot of people in Ireland with this and there's a lot of people in Donegal with it. So the people are there, it's whether they want to go out and learn more about it. And I think they'd be well advised to do so. Do you do anything else? Is exercise impactful on this, or is this all internal
It's all internal. Diet, really. We would recommend people don't take anything with iron supplements, like a lot of the cereals, breakfast cereals will have iron supplements. So we'd recommend you don't do that. Or vitamin C supplements. Vitamin C increases the absorption of iron, so we try and stay away from that. we advise people to take moderate alcohol intake and then just a general healthy lifestyle.
Moderate sounds okay. That sounds like a green light, doctor.
Moderate. Low or no.
No, moderate.
Low
okay.
or no. Yeah.
All right, listen, thanks very much. Just one final recap. Next Wednesday, Clannery Hotel, lovely setting as well. It's at 7 p.m. It's open and it's free and it's informal by the sounds of things. Mm-hmm. It's going to be informative and educational, a chance to ask and answer questions. Dr. Sure. Paul Grant, thanks for calling down.
Larry Donnelly, lecturer above the bar at the law faculty, an Irish-American law attorney, writer and political contributor, resident in Ireland. Larry, what's going on?
An awful lot. Look, you know, the polls are very, very close. And I think that people in the U.S. and around the world are waiting for Tuesday with bated breath, depending on what the outcome might be.
I'm not sure if it's algorithms or what have you, but I think Donald Trump seems to be running a better campaign. I think President Joe Biden, in his comments, though, like everything, they're taken out of context and amplified. And people can't see the truth, but be that as it may, we had a comedian at a rally in New York that made a joke about Puerto Rico being effectively a garbage island. The Harris campaign were making great inroads on that. Joe Biden in a Zoom call then, you could argue, said that effectively anyone who supports Donald Trump is garbage. He turns up on stage dressed as a bin man. This is where we're at, Larry.
Yeah, it was the raw racism that I think was on stage at Madison Square Garden at the Trump rally was, you know, particularly damaging and still could be particularly damaging, particularly among with Latinos who are, you know, are supporting Trump in big numbers and who I think one comedian at least went deliberately out of his way to offend in a very profound way. And we've heard from that community in the U.S. saying how aghast they were, including from some people who said it had been their intention to vote for Donald Trump and are now thinking about shifting to the other direction. But coming as they did on the heels of that, when that was really growing legs and gaining a lot of media attention, Biden's comment was a seriously unwelcome distraction from all of that. And it has allowed Trump to cast it in the same light as Hillary Clinton's infamous comment about the deplorables in 2016, and to use it as a rallying cry to his support base and also people, that small cadre of people who are still undecided but don't like being talked down to by Democrats. And I think that this has been an advantage for Trump in the waning days. Whether it will cancel out the damage that was done at that Madison Square Garden rally, it's an open question, but these are the things that when this is decided, when the votes have been counted, pundits probably like me will be looking back and saying one or the other was the difference in the election.
Where are we at? It's very hard to read, isn't it? And it's not exactly like we're going to find out the exact situation on polling day itself. It is incredibly tight. What do we need to be looking out for, November 5th and on?
Well, you know, the battleground states, at least, of course, according to the aggregated polling, which, as we know, is not always correct, it's all within the margin of error. At the moment, the seven states that are often identified, Trump has marginal leads in five out of the seven. Harris has marginal leads in two out of the seven. What I'd be watching for in terms of two states that are kind of out of the battlegrounds, if you were to say they were sort of outliers. So North Carolina would be a real reach for Harris. If Harris is able to win North Carolina, that augurs very well for her chances. On the flip side, Nevada is a real reach for Trump. If Trump wins Nevada, that augurs very well for his chances. At the end of the day, if this thing is that close, in my view, it could well come down to Pennsylvania, where, you know, again, the polls have Trump ahead by a point or maybe even less, where it's all going to come down to voter turnout at the end of the day. The other thing I should say, Greg, is, you know, we're caught up in the dead heat of the moment, but given the nuances of the Electoral College system, this thing could break narrowly, you know, maybe 2 or 3 points here, 2 or 3 points there, narrowly but decisively in the direction of one candidate or another. So even though the popular vote may be close, it could be the case that the Electoral College margin is bigger than we think it could be.
Yeah, and what are the key election points? I'm hearing an awful lot from Trump, immigration and inflation. That seems to be the two he's on. Access to healthcare for women seems to be a big element from Kamala. And I suppose those talking points reach different demographics, don't they, really? And who's going to be most motivated to come out and vote who wasn't picked up by the person with a clipboard?
Yeah, if it does come down to that kind of basic an equation, then you'd have to say Donald Trump has the advantage because, yes, very many American women are aggrieved and angry at the reversal of Roe versus Wade. But if you look at the data and if you look at the anecdotes and, for instance, the vox pops that we see in newspapers, not just from the U.S., but here and in the U.K., what are the issues that constantly come up with people in the battleground states? They're immigration and inflation. And the people are very angry with the Biden-Harris administration on that front. Trump could capitalize very much on that. And here's where Harris, in terms of as a messenger, as a candidate, in my view, she has not been strong. She has not made any decent arguments on either one of those issues. And it seems that even the most basic question, she seems to circle around and revert to Trump is dangerous without making the case as to why people should vote for her.
And finally, how influential do you think now effectively the full weight of the X platform being behind Trump is, and influencers, people with influence like Joe Rogan, effectively he would say he's impartial, but look at he's behind Trump as well. That's at least how it seems. But you have Elon Musk right behind Donald Trump, a position for him potentially in a Trump administration. How could that be a difference maker? I would say Elon Musk's ego would have thought that he should have already won it by now, but it's clearly not the case.
No, I mean, and look, yeah, there's no doubt that those people like Musk and then to a lesser extent Rogan, you know, who have huge platforms, outsized followings, can't, you know, do have disciples, do have people they can manipulate and get to support. They certainly are working on behalf of Trump. I'll give you the opposing argument. The opposing argument is that they are just doing the opposite of what, in the view of people in conservative America, would say is the mainstream media won't give Donald Trump a fair shake. So again, the media landscape in America is less than what we'd want.
I was watching CNN and they were literally trawling through the archives to find Donald Trump using the word garbage. Firefighting, like, that's not media in my view. And the journalists sitting there involved in that need to wobble their head. Larry, thank you. I know you're in demand this morning. Take care of yourself. Lovely to chat to you as always.
Thanks, Greg.
Bye-bye. Larry Donnelly there, Irish-American law attorney, writer and political contributor residing in Ireland. It's up in the air. What's going to happen? I don't know. I pray our politics here in Ireland never gets to the stage it is in the USA. Well, I'm not afraid. If that's the way this country wants to go, that's it. But I think we are heading in that direction. Say up to 20,000 people could have it and don't know. That's hematomicrosis. And that's why we're doing the information piece, because it's very manageable if you get treatment. You can avoid the damage to the likes of your kidneys, the risk of diabetes and damage to your heart. So really important if you're in the at risk to definitely get that looked at. Thank you for that, by the way. I started school when I was 60 years ago. I was beaten on the first day and every day after that because I was left-handed. Physical and mental torture. It still affects me to this day. What a way for a child to be treated. What a way for a person to be created to in the formative years. Day one at school. You know, nowadays, thankfully, for the most part, it's mums and dads sort of at tears at the gates waving them off. Imagine on your first day being beaten because you were left-handed, a kitog. Probably had your left hand tied behind your back too. I wouldn't be surprised. That went on an awful lot. Why do the Irish think they're entitled to houses, etc.? No one is entitled to anything. Some of the Irish that are crying about people coming into this country should get up off their backsides and get a job. I think social welfare should be halved. Okay. That's one person's point of view. Right, we'll be back with more, including more of your comments that are coming in quite thick and fast after these. Now, returning to an issue we've discussed before, but often we talk about these things around you know, if it's reform of the electoral register, it's often just around about the time the vote's taking place. Or in this case, we often talk about this, you know, just around about the time exams are taking place. So no harm getting this out there earlier on in the school year. Rosie Bissett is CEO of Dyslexia Ireland and is with me now. Hi, Rosie.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
I am good. And we're talking about calls from Dyslexia Ireland for extra time in state exams for students with dyslexia. Now, this is, for me, it should be an open door that you're pushing here. It makes absolutely perfect sense. If people, you give people, if they need a little bit of extra time so that they have an equal chance of achieving what their peers do. Hard to believe we're actually trying to campaign and make this so. But anyway, why is it important, do you believe, for young people or older people with dyslexia to have longer time in state exams?
Well, I suppose the core challenge that many individuals with dyslexia have is processing written language is challenging for them. So it takes them longer to read, to decode text, to perhaps may have to reread it several times to comprehend what, we'll say, a question is being asked on an exam paper. And then when it comes to writing, there is the processing, getting information from their long-term memory, through that muscle memory, through to handwriting, through to spelling accuracy. And many of those steps are slower and less fluent for individuals with dyslexia. So obviously a timed exam like our Junior Cert and Leaving Cert June exams really are probably the one of the most stressful situations that an individual with dyslexia is ever going to be placed under.
I mean, we can go back 16 years. The State Examinations Commission received advice from its own experts stating such that more time should be given to those with dyslexia.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose this is just, honestly, sometimes I feel like it's Groundhog Day. I'm having the same conversations, talking about the same issues, you know, for so many years now at this stage. And essentially, we have just huge resistance from a state body, which despite its own expert advisory group recommending that students with dyslexia and other additional needs should have additional time, nothing has been done about it, as you say, so many years later.
Because I think they might know it's the right thing to do, but they don't want the hassle of trying to make it so.
I think there's, obviously there's a fear. Many people have fear of change. Okay, certainly that's we know that as human beings, unfortunately. Yes, there will be a piece of work involved in it, but it's a piece of work that absolutely needs to be done and should be done. Extra time is common, a best practice, almost the first additional accommodation that is provided in all jurisdictions. And ironically, if our students manage to get through our Leaving Cert system, if they go into college and they walk into ATU, if they walk into college in Letterkenny or Dublin or wherever, one of the first things that a student with additional needs will be offered is additional time in exams. So it's such a huge anomaly and outlier, and really it's not good enough in 2024 that we're still...
And these are victims of the system we've set up whereby so much of a person's future, at least it can feel like that at the time, is determined by a series of exams over 2 weeks. Do you know, we've created this. Now, I know there is some, there are some variances in that, but basically it's still the same. So there is a review ongoing, though. It's going to take a while. Everything does. All reviews do take a while. And I do feel if eventually they do come up with the obvious correct decision, I do feel for the students over the next 2, 3, maybe 4 years that don't have this, I was going to call it an advantage, but don't have this levelling of the playing field.
Exactly. It's not an advantage. It's leveling the playing field. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, like, look, yes, reviews take time. But at the same time, this is such a no brainer of an issue, given that there's already been a review and an expert group that has recommended this. You know, frankly, a timeline of 2 to 3 years is just, it's just not good enough. You know, and we shouldn't be seeing, as you say, how many more generations, tens of thousands of young people struggling in their exams, and then how many more Junes, you know, do they have to go through that? Yeah.
Rosie, listen, thanks for your time. Take care of yourself. That's Rosie Bissett, CEO of Dyslexia Ireland. If you agree that more time, or disagree that more time should be given for people with dyslexia for state exams, let me know. 086 60 25,000.